Thank you very much, Randy, and in Ag News for this Thursday morning. While the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement is set for a vote in the House today, Republicans and Democrats both claimed credit for the final version of the pact Wednesday. AgriPulse says Republican lawmakers piled their praise upon President Trump for demanding that the North American Free Trade Agreement be renegotiated. However, Democrats say the changes they demanded were what made the agreement work. During the early days of negotiations, Democrats said they wouldn't support the agreement unless it discourages U.S. companies from relocating to Mexico. The Trump administration's initial agreement fell short, but House Democrats fought hard for greater accountability in the final draft, says California Representative Linda Sanchez. Republican Kevin Brady of Texas says President Trump and Ambassador Lighthizer delivered on their promise for a pro-growth and modern trade pact. We now have a trade deal that will deliver historic wins for our economy. Democrats say the new measures in the USMCA will allow for unions nationwide in Mexico and will eventually push wages higher within that country. Republicans point out that it's been over a year since the new agreement was signed, saying Democrats' obsession with impeachment has kept a vital agreement from getting approved. Moving on into World Ag News, some details are starting to emerge on how China would increase imports from the U.S. by as much as $200 billion over the next 2 years. That would meet its commitments under the Phase One trade deal announced last week. Bloomberg says the still unsigned deal includes Chinese purchase levels of $40 to $50 billion in U.S. ag commodities, a level which many experts think isn't reachable. To help get closer to that figure, sources close to the matter tell Bloomberg that Beijing plans to restart purchases of ethanol by lifting or waiving trade war tariffs on fuel. China is also considering taking U.S. trade from Hong Kong into its mainland ports, which would enable about $10 billion a year in U.S. goods to go directly to the mainland, which would boost the tally. The U.S. doesn't count those shipments that go through Hong Kong as part of its trade with China. China will also grant more regular waivers on retaliatory tariffs to local buyers of U.S. farm products like soybeans and pork. Back in November, China had lifted its ban on U.S. poultry shipments as part of the trade negotiations. U.S. officials estimate poultry exports will top $1 billion a year. In the latest news on African swine fever, the virus continues its relentless march across Asia. Indonesia's Minister of Agriculture confirms the country's first outbreak of the virus in the far northwestern part of the multi-island nation. The confirmation came on December 12th and wasn't unexpected, as increasing reports of pig deaths have come from that area, as well as several others since late September. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization is working with Indonesia's Director General of Livestock and Animal Health Services. The nation's animal health director asked the FAO to provide guidance on containment and control measures for the virus. Indonesia joins an unfortunate list of Asian countries with ASF outbreaks. In a different part of the world, a pocket of African swine fever virus in Poland is continuing to grow near the border with Germany throughout the past month. Even though the outbreak is 30 miles from Germany, which is the European Union's top pork producer, the European Commission has extended Poland's ASF control zone to the German border. For German hog producers, the increasing number of positive ASF reports is very bad news. Some German producers and officials are asking Poland to construct a border-type wall to keep infected wild hogs from entering into Germany. Moving back now to National Ag News, data collection has started for two Census of Agriculture special studies, the 2019 Organic Survey and the 2019 Census of Horticultural Specialties. Michael Clemens has this report.
USDA NAS has begun mailing survey codes to thousands of producers nationwide this month in an effort to collect this important once-every-five-year data. Donald Bice, USDA NAS Census Planning Branch Chief, explains the purpose of special studies.
Special studies are only available after we do a full census, so I want to make sure I take the opportunity to thank all the farmers and ranchers out there that responded to the census. But moving forward, we like to get a little bit more detailed information about some of the populations we identified during the census, And they're really designed for that more detailed information about a particular practice or a particular commodity.
Survey codes for producers to respond online were mailed this month, with the organic survey deadline set for January 10th, 2020, and the horticulture survey deadline set for February 5th, 2020.
Next two we have going on are organic survey. We want to get information about them to get a better picture of how healthy the organic sector is. And the other is the census of horticultural specialties. This is a good one because a lot of times people don't think of the producers of our flowers and our nursery and products like shrubs and Christmas trees, sod. They're an important part of the agriculture sector, and we need to represent them with some detailed information to just show how much impact they can have in our ag sector.
As both are part of the Census of Agriculture program, federal law requires all those who receive a survey code to respond. BICE says it's important for producers to participate in the studies.
There's not a week that goes by that I don't hear about somebody requesting data about the organic industry. And in the absence of information, people speculate. We want to have evidence-based policy decision-making. So statistics are a vital part of that. As such, this is an opportunity for the producer to let us know what information they have going on in their local area and report it in an arena that we can hold it confidential. We're not going to let anybody else see it. We're just going to aggregate it and provide it for those policy decision-making questions at the national level, for example.
Producers can respond quickly online or through paper surveys.
Well, we really want people to respond online. We have put a lot of emphasis on our online responses. Outside of that, we're going to send out paper questionnaires. We're going to follow up with phone calls if we need to. But if we get people to respond early and online, then we can eliminate some of those continued correspondence and get the vital data we need early so that we can do a little bit more information gathering on special parts of the survey.
Results for both will be available fall 2020. Learn more online at nas.usda.gov. Michael Clements reporting.
In other national ag news on your Thursday morning, the formation of the new U.S. Hemp Growers Association was announced in Indianapolis. The brand new association will focus on things like educational efforts and market development resources, research, and networking opportunities. A USHGA release says the organization will provide a unified voice for farmers to actively engage in critically important advocacy efforts. More than 300 members of the U.S. Hemp Farming Alliance will fold into the new USHGA. Karen Wilcox will serve as the initial executive director of the organization. A majority of the organization's board of directors is expected to be active hemp farmers. The forward-thinking industry leaders who've come together in this association see the potential for hemp as an agricultural commodity, Wilcox says. They also understand how much this industry can contribute to the environment and the sustainable product that benefits farmers and consumers at the grassroots level. The Wilcox also said she's honored to be part of this historical moment. Moving on now to state and local ag news. When it comes to cooking with your kids, some parents might envision warm images of their child happily working alongside with them as they make a delicious meal. On the other hand, some parents might picture a big mess, a time crunch, and barely edible food. Here to help us understand why we should not only include kids, but also dairy foods in the kitchen, is Aaron McGraw, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council, who explains that this time of year is the perfect time to get children involved in the kitchen.
So this is definitely a great time to start thinking about pulling kids into the kitchen. With holidays and so many meals and snacks and goodies being prepared, it's a really good opportunity to start incorporating kids. Including kids in preparing meals and snacks teaches them how to prepare family meals. You can teach them about the history of some recipes, how they've been passed down, about family culture and family history. It's also a really great time for parents and kids to connect, because when you're cooking, kids may start to relax a little bit and open up about what's going on in their lives, which can often be kind of difficult to do sometimes, especially as kids get a little bit older. It's also a great way to teach math skills. There's fractions, there's temperatures, there's reading skills from reading a recipe. It also helps give kids a really great sense of accomplishment that they've prepared something, they've made it, other family members are enjoying it. It can really help boost self-confidence as well.
Aaron also explains different activities children can do in the kitchen. even kids as young as the age of 2.
Definitely. My daughter is 15 months right now, and she's not super helpful just yet. Usually starting around 2 years of age, actually, though, there are tasks that kids can do to be involved in cooking. So around 2 or 3 years old, they can help wash fruits and vegetables. They can help mash potatoes in a container that's not too hot. And they can also help apply, like, soft spreads, like cream cheese and things like that in a dish. When they get a little bit older, let's say 4 to 5 years old, they can help set the table. They can help put pots and pans away when you're emptying the dishwasher. They can stir things up for a recipe, things like sprinkling cheese on top of a salad or little ingredients like that. They can also start getting a little more involved with. In around 6 to 7, they can do things like pour milk into a measuring cup for a recipe, help peel potatoes. I just did that for a very long time, helping my mom get ready for Thanksgiving. I would have loved a 6 to 7-year-old helper for that. And then dicing and mincing vegetables, too. As they get a little bit older, they can help make sandwiches and wraps, scooping things into pans, pounding chicken around 8 or 9 years old. And by 12, they can do most tasks, like chopping and that type of thing as well.
Erin also explains that if your child is a picky eater, having them help you in the kitchen might help them overcome that pickiness.
It really does help. So when a child cooks a meal or is involved in that meal, they can a sense of ownership can be created with that food, and they'll be more likely to try it. And it can start from taking your child to the grocery store with you and make it something fun. You can test them with picking out a color in the produce department. You can assign them, find a red food that you've never tried before or that you have tried and you want to do something with, or find a green food. So starting with even selecting that food for purchase gets the kids' wheels turning about this food and maybe wanting to try it or what they can do with it. And then as they're helping prepare it, they're being involved in getting more of a sense of, this is my dish, this is something I want to try, I want to see the end result. When a child is involved in the preparation of meals, they're more likely to try the foods they help prepare, which can be a really great way to get foods in that a child would otherwise refuse. And then the other thing to think about, too, is kids can seem really picky, but it's our job as parents to be the providers of the food. It's their job to eat it, but if you've got a picky eater, if you're only providing them the foods that you know they're going to eat, the chances of them exploring new foods and new options are going to be diminished. So a great way to start that is by offering a food you know your kid likes, but then have them help prepare. It could even be just rinsing it or stirring or mixing or something like that. Have them help prepare the new food that you offer alongside that favorite food and just keep offering it. Some research says it takes upwards of 20 exposures for a kid to be willing to put that new food in their mouth, but even getting them feeling the texture or helping mix it or even trying it in that way increases the chances of them enjoying it.
Again, that was Erin McGraw, registered dietitian with the St. Louis District Dairy Council. Moving on into other state and local news, 700 people filled a building in Springfield Tuesday to hear more about hemp here in Illinois. The group, consisting of farmers, processors, policy setters, and those curious about growing a legal form of cannabis, heard from industry experts the first year about growing hemp in Illinois went. Jeff Cox, the division chief of medicinal plants at the Illinois Department of Agriculture, says 644 farmers were licensed to grow hemp last year and now are waiting to hear about the hemp harvest.
I don't know how many were planted yet. What I do know is that we approved over 21,000 acres in the state. But we will get final numbers. That's one of the requirements of the licensees, to tell us what they were approved for, what they actually planted, and then what they actually were able to harvest. So that data's coming.
State officials say that they need a boost to the state's hemp industry, and that will be to build processing industries for hemp fiber and CBD oil. Moving on now to the local Ag Community Bulletin Board here at 6:39 on your Thursday morning. The Montgomery County USDA Farm Service Agency will be holding an informational meeting to provide an overview of two USDA safety net programs, agriculture risk coverage and price loss coverage. The meeting is scheduled for this morning at 9 a.m. and will be held at the Montgomery County Farm Bureau on the Courthouse Square in Hillsboro. Sign up for the Safety Net program for 2019 and 2020 is currently underway, and an election choice between ARC and PLC must be made by March 15th of next year. The Montgomery County FSA office would also like you to please RSVP for the meeting because they're putting together folders with your current acreage. And it might be too late, but you could still attend and call them at 532-3361. Also, again this year, the Mid-Illinois Pork Producers has donated pork certificates yet again for me to give away for Christmas. There's nothing better than a ham for Christmas dinner, so here's your chance to win $20 worth of pork. On Friday, I'll pick 12 lucky winners, in our 12 days of Christmas pork giveaway. All you have to do is email us at WSMI@WSMIradio.com with pork in the subject line of the email along with your name and phone number so we can contact you. And then tomorrow Friday, I'll pick 12 lucky winners for our 12 days of pork giveaway. So I'd like to thank all the folks with the Mid-Illinois Pork Producers for again sponsoring the giveaway this year, and they would all like to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And that'll wrap it up for this Thursday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us or anything for the community bulletin board, you can email that to us at WSMI@WSMIradio.com. So for this Thursday morning, December 19th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.